Would either of you like another cup of coffee?
I will, but Jim won't.
I think I will have another cup of coffee.
Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Harold, is the coffee all right?
Mm-mm.
You mean it's as bad as yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
No improvement at all?
Mm-mm.
Harold, don't just shake your head. You've got to tell me what's wrong with the coffee.
Bad taste.
That tickles.
Jump, jump, jump.
Good evening, brothers and sisters, and welcome to another edition of Homebrew Talk, your monthly internet radio program that unlocks the mysteries of Zymergy and spreads the homebrew gospel one carboy at a time. Homebrew Talk is brought to you by the good people at Grow Radio, Gainesville's very own independent, community-run, volunteer-driven, non-profit, non-corporate, completely awesome internet radio station. Lots of great programming on growradio.org. Check it out. Homebrew Talk is also brought to you by your Hogtown Brewers, a merry band of homebrewing enthusiasts that are just merry all the time and enthusiastic about what we do, which is make homebrew meads and ciders in the comfort of our own home. Once a month, we get together to share technique, share recipe, and most importantly, to share homebrew. You want to get involved with Hogtown Brewers, start with the website at hogtownbrewers.org. Good evening. My name is John. I am the co-owner and head brewer at First Magnitude right here in Gainesville, Florida. I will be one of your homebrew jockeys tonight. Along with me, as always, is my homebrew jockey partner, Ron. Ron and I are both members of the Hogtown Brewers, longtime homebrewers, and both are BJCP certified homebrew judges. Hello, Ron.
Hello, John.
Ron, you know, every month you come to the studio and you're excited and you can't wait and you want to deliver the homebrew gospel one more time. But today your caramel macchiato is just overflowing and you just seem like you can't wait. What can our listeners expect tonight?
Oh, I say wake up and smell the podcast, John. Because we have many things brewing tonight, starting with all the glorious ways one can infuse coffee into their homebrew. Then we spice things up with spice. Yeah. we'll go through many ideas to season that homebrew. So let's get started and pour a cup.
Harvey, want anything special for your birthday?
Just a decent cup of coffee.
You're kidding.
I'm serious. Honey, your coffee's undrinkable.
It's pretty harsh.
Well, so's your coffee.
He ain't getting any on his birthday.
Her coffee got a rating in the 20s, I think.
Well, that ad is hilarious and such that it's an old retro commercial, similar to the one that was in the intro. And those ads would not fly today.
No, probably not.
No, because it was pretty funny watching all these coffee ads. A lot of them I remember when I was a kid, and a lot of them were from the 60s and 70s. And they're the type of ads where the husband is mocking the wife as if he can't get off his butt and try and get some good coffee or brew some, and makes the wife feel bad. And the wife always has to go to, you know, Mrs. Olson for advice. And oh yeah, you remember Mrs. Olson?
Sure, Folgers is mountain grown, the richest kind of coffee.
So Mrs. Olson, hey, as you recall, she's that Swedish neighbor, you know, who was empathetic, you know, about your coffee tasting like road tar and, you know, showing the goodness of mountain grown, causing you to make better coffee and implicitly, you know, saving your marriage from a meltdown.
Not to be confused with Susan Olson.
Cindy Brady.
No, right. Cindy, yeah. Very good, Ron. Yeah.
Did she drink coffee at that early age?
I don't know. She probably got into it a little later on, though.
Yeah, probably did. But the character of Mrs. Olson, that is actually quite in the area of advertising. That's quite the enduring character. It was used in the Folgers commercials from 1965 to 86 and was played by an actress, Virginia Christine, who she's a voice actress, and not Swedish. In fact, she was born in Iowa, no accent whatsoever.
Mm.
And, you know, Mrs. Olson, she's up in the along the tier with those other great advertising characters. You know, some that rival her is, you know, Mr. Whipple of Don't Squeeze the Charmin fame. You know, he, that character played for 20 years from the mid-60s to the mid-80s, played by actor Dick Wilson. And then, of course, my personal favorite, Fred the Baker, who got up each morning because it was time to make the donuts.
Time to make the donuts.
Now, his tenure wasn't quite as long, only about 15 years from early 80s to late 90s. But, you know, it's too bad that, you know, Fred the Baker, you know, never did a commercial with Mrs. Olson. Seems like they'd go together, donuts, coffee. But let's get back on track, coffee. Now, full disclosure, I don't drink the stuff. it's not my cup of tea. Also, I don't drink a lot of tea. But I like me porters and stouts.
Uh-huh.
And ironically, I suppose, my wife does drink coffee, but doesn't like porters and stouts. So it's just something we try and work through.
Yeah, it's like the gift of the Magi in reverse.
But in beer, I can appreciate coffee when it's done well.
Sure.
And I figure I'm well qualified for this segment since I don't like coffee. Because that means if I do like a beer that's been properly infused with coffee, well, mm-hmm. then it must have been done right.
There you go.
As someone who's not a fan of just drinking the stuff straight. You know, some people like coffee and, you know, intense coffee and beer, and that's good for them too. So how do you infuse coffee into beer without needing help from Mrs. Olson? Well, let me tell you one wrong method, and I was tempted to try this and quickly got out of that idea is putting any of the beans in your boil. And that's because you put in the boil, you're going to be extracting that coffee bitterness and some oils from it, and that's not going to be good drinks, good beer. And you know, if you do that, that will certainly make your significant other scold you that your beer tastes terrible and will want a divorce, so don't do that. But there are many methods that do work quite well. One of them, which is a very popular way with homebrewers, is simply putting the coffee beans into the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And that simply put them at the bottom of your carboy and rack on top when you are racking to a secondary. You do have the option of either grinding or using ground coffee or using whole beans that aren't ground. Both will work just fine. You may ask, well, then why ground at all? Both work fine. Well, that's possibly an experiment for you to try. I suspect that whole beans probably take a little longer to infuse, mm-hmm. and because less surface area, because it's not ground up. But certainly not having to get ground coffee or grind it yourself it makes it easier. Plus, you got to figure that if you stay with whole beans without grinding it well ahead of time or buying it ground, you know, probably have a fresher coffee bean flavor.
Sure.
Now, with sanitation, you won't really have to worry about sanitation if you're buying your coffee bean product from, you know, packaged or pre-ground. It's been sanitized for you. However, if you are buying coffee beans, you know, from a bucket in your favorite market that is not packaged, well, then you're going to possibly have to do some sanitizing there. Now,
so you want to watch out for Joe's bucket of coffee beans.
Who knows how much he's been pawing it?
Yeah, who knows?
There is, now that is a pretty straightforward method that a lot of people do. There is one downside to using your secondary if you want to infuse your beer with coffee flavor. And what do you think that might be, John? Because how much do I enjoy racking the secondary?
Well, you know, I think that we've established here on Homebrew Talk that in most cases, racking to the secondary, just not necessary.
Not necessary. It's a hassle.
Risk infection.
Infection, oxidation.
Yep.
And I think if you're a competent home brewer, you can certainly not worry too much about those factors. The big thing to me is the hassle. I just don't want to take that extra effort and time and cleaning, blah, blah, for the secondary. But we're still, if you're into it, put in your coffee beans secondary, no problem. But here's an alternative for you, especially if you don't like doing it in the secondary, and that is using a cold brew. I understand that you actual coffee drinkers out there, do you drink coffee?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe you can confirm this, but I understand that for those who have tried it, coffee drinkers who have tried it, if you have the time and you do a cold brew, the coffee is way more excellent than doing it with hot water.
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Yes. Well, it seems to be consensus. And so cold brewing your coffee beans and using that to infuse your homebrew will get the flavor, the aroma of coffee, but not any of that undue coffee and harsh bitterness. Now, when you cold brew, you're basically steeping it in cold or room temperature water, not cold water, actually, room temperature water, and you're going to steep it for 12 hours on up to a day, sort of a longer the better kind of thing. And you have the option of, after 12 hours to a day, putting it through a filter, and then you can either take that coffee that you just made, which is going to be a pretty strong coffee tea, actually,
sure.
Is what you're making. And if you're bottling, well, then you would put it at the bottom of your bottling bucket. If you're kegging, you would go ahead and put it at the bottom of your keg and then go ahead and rack from the primary into your keg when you're kegging. Now, an optional enhancement to that idea is doing a cold brew in a French press.
Oui, oui.
Now, you've used a French press, but not for coffee, I think. Just hops.
That's true. Yes, yes. The French press as a kind of rudimentary hop back is... but that's a whole other show.
Whole other show, but it is rather tasty. I did try that.
It works.
In fact, the entire reason I bought a French press is because you said that worked pretty well. But now that I got a French press, I went ahead and used the... This is the method I used for a recent brew. Using a cold brew in a French press, did it for a day. And then went ahead and proceeded with the press, got that coffee liquid, and put in the bottom of my keg and kegged my beer. So got an instant mix right there. For sanitation, same thing. Well, you will need to sanitize your French press. And if you're grinding your own coffee, try your best to sanitize your grinder, but on top of doing all that, I went ahead and pasteurized the resulting coffee that I made. So I put it into a pot, heated it up to 170 degrees, and let it sit there for several minutes while I was prepping the corny keg and all my material, and then when ready, poured the sanitized coffee, strong coffee, of course, into the bottom of the keg and went to it.
Cool. Louis would be proud.
Very nice. Yes. Yes, he would. Now you may be asking, well, that's great. How much of this coffee do you use for these batches? I can never give you a hard and fast number on that. It's always per your taste. All I will say is for a particular batch that I did where I made a brown porter, gravity around 1060, I used about half a cup of, no, not half a cup,
half cup, jeez.
1 cup of coffee beans prior to grinding. So that's a half cup, 8 ounces. No, I did not weigh it. I just did it by volume, 1 cup. And Alton Brown would be shaking his head right now for not weighing it and using it by volume. But, hey, that's what I did. And and I did the cold brew, 1 cup of beans into 2.5 cups of spring water. And
that spring water is the best, you know.
Yeah.
Particularly if it's from a first magnitude spring. But that's another story.
Yes. I cannot confirm or deny or confirm if that spring water came from a first magnitude spring. So there you go with that volume and that amount of coffee beans tended to work for my particular batch. Your mileage and coffee flavor will vary. Now, let's say that you're afraid of commitment, that you don't want to put a whole 5-gallon or 10-gallon batch of beer infuse it with coffee. You just want to make a nice, decent base beer and then flavor it at your leisure per pint. Well, I've got a great idea for that.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, use an extract and making your own coffee extract. To make this extract, get one of those, get a jar that you would normally do when you're canning, or any decent vessel that you can have a screw top on.
Like a ball mason jar?
Exactly.
Got it.
Great word.
You said jar.
Uh-huh. 4 tablespoons of ground coffee, steeping, and 1 cup of vodka. Don't really care what vodka. Wait several days, and each day when you get a chance, maybe swirl it. Not quite as often as you would a starter, but you know, swirl it once in a while.
No stir plate for your vodka.
No stir plate needed.
Okay,
no.
All right. Just checking.
I don't need that little suppository magnet spinning around in your extract, and of course. This particular extract, technically called a tincture, because it's alcohol-based, and it's quite the nice aromatic extract when it's all done. And then you just got to put a small amount into your pint, slowly stir just to get it spread mixed in, and do it to taste. And that is a great way to find out if any of your beers that you brew might blend well with a coffee flavor, and that might inspire you to eventually, in time, commit to go ahead and doing an entire 5 or 10 gallon beer, making the whole thing infused with coffee.
So your fear of commitment might actually turn around to affirming that commitment and going whole hog.
Absolutely. Plus, beer science, damn it, it's experimenting
right
with different flavors.
Now, Ron, when you say a small amount, are we talking about a quarter teaspoon? Are we talking about drops? What are we talking about here?
Well, great question there. As I said, it varies depending on the strength of your extract and the coffee that you used. In my particular batch, I used about half a tablespoon per 10 or 12 ounces of the particular brown porter that I was brewed, and that had the right ratio for me. But a little less, a little more, depends on your taste.
Got it.
Okay. Now, real quickly, what types of coffee work best? Well, definitely get the good stuff. Not the bargain basement stuff you get at the grocery store. And as much as I love the Folgers coffee ads, you can probably do much better than Folgers. Flavored coffees do well. Vanilla bean coffee, pecan. There's all kinds of flavors out there.
Sure.
Hey, go nuts. What kind of base beer styles will this work in? Well, you know the ones that definitely will be money in the bank. That's stouts, porters, and browns. But don't let that stop you from trying different styles. But some people like it in their pale ales. Some people like it in other styles. And don't be afraid to try it in even a mead or cider. That also might hit the spot. Up next, we're going to spice some things up, really. But first, going to do a brew tune break on Home Brew Talk. Listen in the Grow Radio.
Maybe you should try Folgers coffee.
Why Folgers?
Folgers uses mountain grown coffee.
Mountain grown?
Yeah, that's the richest kind.
Home Brew Talk.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You can't get cherry soda, 'cause they've got to sell their quota, and the way things are, I guess they never will. They've got a zillion tons of coffee in Brazil. No tea or tomato juice, you'll see. No potato juice, 'cause the planters down in Santa's all say no, no, no. A politician's daughter was accused of drinking water and was fined a great big $50 bill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. Eggs need savor. Coffee ketchup gives them flavor. Coffee pickles way outsell the dill. Why they put coffee in the coffee in Brazil? No tea, or tomato juice. You'll see no potato juice. 'Cause the planters down in Santa's all say no, no, no. So you'll add to the local color, serving coffee with a cruller. Dunking doesn't take a lot of skill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. Man, they got a gang of coffee in Brazil. Hey, Pedro, get the flashlight, I cannot find the sugar.
Judgment on the market square. I have my favorite table and I have my chair. Natives are friendly and the sun flies high. All kinds of crazy waiters, they go drifting by. Shade. Conversation going nowhere and yet everywhere. Kick off those sad shoes and let the bare toes tingle. Slip off that shoulder strapless and the thick black hair. Come sit with me and take decaf, design a coffee. Come laugh and listen as the ragamuffin children play. Dog in a black cat, down a shuffle in the shadows. You got cappuccino lip on a short skirt day. Electric afternoon and shrill cell phones are mating. Lame dog is dreaming, dreaming of a better life. Where bed is fluffy pillows, table scraps are filling mignon. Flicked indiscreetly by the lazy waiter's knife. Come sit with me and take decaf, design the coffee. Come laugh and listen as the ragamuffin children play. Lame dog in a black cat, now they shuffle in the shadows. You got cappuccino lip on a short skirt day. Conversation going nowhere and yet everywhere. Kick off those sad shoes and let the bare toes tingle. Slip off the shoulder strapless and the thick black hair. Come sit with me and take decaf, design the coffee.
I'm laughing less and as the ragamuffin children play. A lame dog and a black cat, now they shuffle in the shadows. You got cappuccino lay on a short skirt day. Come sit with me and take decaf, designer coffee. I'm laughing less and as the ragamuffin children play. A lame dog and a black cat, now they shuffle in the shadows. You got cappuccino lay on a short skirt day.
Welcome back to Homebrew Talk, and I must say that tune break was Mountain Grown, the richest kind.
Yes, indeed. You know, I was dozing off a little bit, but I am wide awake now because we had Old Blue Eyes on, and I think that's the first time that any Sinatra has been on Homebrew Talk. Am I correct on that?
I believe it is.
Yeah, yep. Well, okay, that was, believe it or not, the coffee song.
Go figure.
And then we followed up by that... Master of the Flute, Ian Anderson, doing a Jethro Tull-like interpretation of the Cappuccino song.
Mamma mia, that's a spicy meatball!
That indeed is a spicy meatball, and I didn't request that soundbite, but I'm really pleased with it.
If you need some Alka-Seltzer with today's topic.
Does your food fight back? Anywho, you know, before we delve into the world of spices, herbs, additives, interesting things you can add to your beer, I do want to report that during that tune break, yes, it is true, many of our listeners have called in and asked questions, do you indeed drink beer on the radio? And only not live, because we're very serious and professional about what we do, but I did get to sample a little bit of the cold brew coffee infused brown porter during the break. And I must say, well done, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
You know, and I like that you chose a brown porter to do that as opposed to a robust porter, which would have a lot of that roast character. It was kind of backed off and the coffee really shone through. And that was a vanilla bean coffee?
Vanilla bean coffee.
Man, yep. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I like it. All right. So moving from coffee on to spices, herbs, other interesting things that you can spice up your homebrew with. I figured I would talk a little bit and just talk about some kind of general considerations if you're going to be using spices or herbs. And then we're going to dive right into it. Homebrew talk, journalistic excellence, talking about an actual homebrew award-winning recipe that we'll break down and comment on here in just a minute. So, as with all things in homebrewing, when it comes to your ingredients, you want to use the freshest ingredients possible. So don't go to the stuff that's been sitting in your spice rack for the last year and a half. You know, you don't want any of that. You want fresh ingredients, especially if there's a place in your town that kind of specializes in that sort of thing. The Spice and Tea Exchange in St. Augustine, not too far down the road here from Gainesville, is fantastic. I've gotten vanilla beans there, all kinds of dry rubs that I don't necessarily use in my beer, but the fresher, the better. It makes all the difference in the world. So, and in using those fresh ingredients, you need to recognize that spices can be pretty strong. So you generally speaking, you want to use restraint, in your brewing. As we've said many times on Homebrew Talk, brew tweak and repeat. As an example, chamomile can really be kind of overwhelming. I talking with food science Eric,
mm-hmm.
friend of the show,
right?
Asking him about his experience with spices, and the first thing that came up was in using some chamomile in an American wheat recipe. He was just surprised at a small amount that had a really huge expression in a 5-gallon batch. So you do want to use some restraint when you're going down that spice highway. I also want to mention that spices do well with thyme, but not too much thyme. I know that when I use ginger, and in fact, I think on our Facebook page in the notes section, you can probably still find going way back years into the Homebrew Talk history, you might be able to find the ginger ale recipe there on the Facebook page, unless that's been altered. Who knows? But anyways,
still there.
It's still there. It's still there. But I found that with the ginger ale, really, really intense at first, so much so that your lips are kind of tingling. I kind of like that. I think that's pretty cool. But 10 days or so, the flavor's mellow and it really blends, you know, just like many other beers with age, you know, things just kind of come together. So what might be very, very strong, your first pour out of the keg or the first bottle that you open, give it a little time. It will, it might do the beer very well. But just like hops and other sorts of things, the flavor does start to decline after a while. So, you know, you gotta use your judgment on that. Generally speaking, you want to avoid clashing flavors. Spices can often make beer seem more bitter. And if you'll notice, most beers that do well with spices are on the low end of the bittering scale. So wheat beers, saisons, brown ales, sort of like you were saying in your last segment, Ron, with coffee. most of the time, you know, your lower bitter beers are going to do better with spice additions. But hey, this is homebrewing. You do what you want. You be like the honey badger on this one. I do recall one that really kind of surprised me. Alligator Brewing here in Gainesville, which is part of Tall Paul's Brew House, had a mint porter. Our good friend Neil did this mint porter, and at first I was like, I don't know if that's going to work, but actually that mint did kind of cut through that the roast flavor of the porter. It was actually kind of a very interesting beer. So that's the beauty of homebrewing.
Was it like a peppermint patty that took you away?
Yeah, you know, wow, man, that's a classic 70s commercial. If only we planned better, Ron. when I get the sensation of a York peppermint patty.
Right. Not that we're old or anything.
Right. All you millennials out there saying, what the hell? Okay. So, right. We're going to avoid the clashing.
Google it, YouTube it. You'll find it.
Yeah, you know, you'll find it. You'll figure it out. So when do you add your spices? Well, most folks I've talked to, well, you're about to respond. Go ahead, Ron.
what?
When do you add your spices generally? When you're putting spice in beer, how do you go about?
Well, it always depends on the recipe, but a lot of times I might do it 1 minute before you turn off the burner.
Sure, yeah. I think most people agree that spices can use some heat to express themselves, so adding it at the end of the boil or in your whirlpool, if you do the whirlpool route, is a good idea. Add them too early in the boil, you're going to boil off a lot of those flavors and the effect that you're trying for, so I totally agree with that. Towards the end of the boil, knockout, or even in the whirlpool, something that you can experiment with and see, you know, what is the best for your particular system. In adding spices, I certainly recommend using a mesh bag for your spice additions, especially if you're using a heat exchanger. If you don't, you're asking for a difficult cleanup. There was this guy that came to the brewery and brewed with us this spice ginger hefeweizen, and it really turned out well, but God blessed did it just wreak havoc on our heat exchanger.
Yeah, I wouldn't let that guy back in.
I don't know if we ever will, but that was my bad because, you know, thinking, all right, we'll throw the spices in there. We want really good exposure, you know.
But I will say, in defense of whoever that guy is, that if you've got a pretty good pot at home for homebrewing and you got a really, really worthy false bottom, not so much a problem.
Well, yeah, I'm of course making fun of this guy that, you know, shall remain nameless. But but I would say the mesh bag is a good technique, And you do want to make sure that you use a bag that's large enough that you know, that's going to let those spices breathe, Ron. You know, you don't want them bunched up. You want them good exposure there in your wort. So, you know, go big on the bag. That's what I say.
It's good to have a big bag.
It's good to have a big bag. So there's a few recommendations, but you know, this is beer science, damn it, and it's beer journalism. So I reached out to Navy ROT instructor and part-time bicycle Jay Walker and Hogtown brewer Jim Ratke.
Oh, that guy.
That guy, because he made a honey basil cream ale that I was very, very impressed with. And I believe it was an award winner. Is that right?
It won Shameful Bronze and a very huge competition in Florida.
Shameful Bronze and a huge competition is nothing shameful about that. So,
Jim, it's glorious shame is what that is.
Hey, there is no shame in bronze, despite that we call it Shameful Bronze. But anyways, so I had the good fortune of trying this honey basil cream ale, and I can vouch for it. It was quite good. And so I was asking him about it and, you know, asking him his inspiration, you know, for this particular beer. And again, like many homebrewers, he's a creative guy. He just wanted to do something different, something beyond the AHA styles. So came up with the idea for a honey basil beer. And as far as honey's concerned, he said he had added it last 5 minutes of the boil. Jim mentioned that he does this because he didn't want to go through the process of pasteurizing the honey. You know, honey has a lot of natural antibacterial qualities to it. So I wouldn't worry about that all that much, but he did want to make sure that it was completely dissolved and thoroughly mixed in the beer. So I, you know, that part I do agree with, you know, adding it late in the boil. I think it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, one reason why I do spices 1 minute before in the boil, maybe he did it a couple minutes before, is the agitation of the boil helps kind of mix it in. It's really the biggest thing.
Because a thorough boil, a really rigorous boil looks like what?
An angry sea.
Oh, man. And this, I thought, was insightful. He mentioned that whenever he uses honey in a beer, he complements it with a little honey malt to reinforce the honey flavor.
Does he say how pretty it is? Does he compliments it?
He does. Yes, indeed. You know, he makes it feel good. Just the opposite of what he does to the basil.
Oh.
That's coming up.
Okay.
So a few ounces of honey malt in a 5 gallon batch really, he believes, emphasizes the honey flavor. And, you know, I think that's good. I dig it. I was asking him if the honey affected his fermentation. He said he didn't really feel like it did in a noticeable way. Honey obviously has a lot of sugars in it, a lot of fermentables there. So if you're adding a significant amount of honey, you definitely need to account for that because you will pick up a few points, you know, when you're adding honey. The basil he used right out of his front yard, actually his front porch, which I think is really cool. Basil, rosemary, lots of herbs grow like weeds down here in Florida. And he just picked it out of his plants on his porch, put it in a hop sock just to avoid any clogging of valves, lines, etc., and added it during the last 5 minutes of the boil. So he was saying that he treated it as a aroma hop addition, which I think is good. And don't have to worry about sanitation, of course, because it's going in on the hot side. So the boil is going to take care of that. But he did bruise the basil.
Okay.
So he scolded it and made it feel really, you know, bad about itself before he shoved it into that, gently crushed it.
Very much insulted it.
Very much insulted. You silly basil. You just, you know, you do very little for me. But anyways, so crushing that slightly as you put it in the hop sock, pop it in the boil. Going to come out just fine. So Jim, like many good brewers, he was concerned about adding too much basil, so he used restraint, which I applaud him for. You know, anytime you add a spice or an herb, it's supposed to support the base style, and balance is really the key. You know, and a lot of people really want to go over the top with it, but he was I think, very judicious in his use of basil, and sure enough, it resulted in Shameful Bronze. So I think that's really pretty cool. He did, of course, as any good homebrewer would, paid attention to the score sheets from the judges, and they mentioned one thing to improve the beer, because, of course, that's why you put your beer in competition, to get feedback and learn how to make it better the next time around. The judges were hoping for more basil aroma, so he is going to do a kind of dry hopping technique and add basil, he mentions, into the secondary for a day or two before bottling next time around.
How's he going to sanitize that?
Well, you know, he didn't say.
I might make a basil tea out of it or something.
Yeah, you could do that, or I would say, you know, possibly steam it. You know, I think steaming would be a good way to go. You got to walk a fine line with that. You know, the exposure to that high temperature is probably, you know, I would say with rinsing it really well and then a light steam, I would think that you'd probably be okay. Now, this is a cream ale, so it's obviously a low gravity beer. So you can't rely on, you know, alcohol content to help you out. I know that sometimes if you're putting in a meat or cider or something, it's going to be higher ABV. You don't have to worry about that quite so much. But yeah, I mean, that's a concern. I think steaming would probably be, you know, a good way to go about doing that. And then, you know, as far as the selection of a cream ale, you know, he wanted a beer that would be a good medium for the honey and basil addition. And I think a cream ale is a real, you know, real good shot at that. As I mentioned in the beginning of the segment, you know, not a beer with a high level of bitterness. So, you know, kudos to Jim. I think that was a very well crafted beer. And, came through and bringing home some bling.
Yeah. Yep. Nice. Congrats.
Yes, I say. So, up next,
we're going to talk about tinctures. Yeah. Great word.
So for those of you taking the GRE out there, that's a new one. Tincture. I think it's time for a brew tune break. You're listening to Homebrew Talk on Grow Radio.
I'm a Homebrew Talk.
All right, welcome back to Homebrew Talk. Just who is that cinnamon girl?
Well, of course, Ron, it's Susan Olson.
Of course.
You know, I understand that through copious research that identity of the cinnamon girl is a mystery, and Neil Young is not ready to reveal.
Yeah, he's not budging.
Yeah, well, you know, that wasn't Neil we heard from, but it was one of my favorites from the 90s, Matthew Sweet. And Susanna Hoffs, who I believe is a Bengal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, you got that going on.
Yeah.
But a fine cover of Cinnamon Girl. And then after that, we followed that up with Blues Traveler, Mulling It Over. And I will say that was pre-weight loss John Popper.
Ah,
and,
no,
you know, backing up my theory that if a band has a really fat guy in it, they're usually badass. And that old Blues Traveler, man, you can't beat it.
No.
Good stuff.
Yep. All right, we are back in the lab doing alchemy of a different sort. And, you know, there are there's a specific type of extract that uses alcohol. And we talked about this in the segment when we were talking about coffee extracts. And the type of extract that uses alcohol or, you know, ethanol, the kind you drink, you know, are called tinctures. Great name. I don't know why that makes me laugh. They are typically 25 to 60% of alcohol and can often dissolve more substances than water. So that's why they're quite useful for making extract.
Even better than the universal solvent, huh?
I suppose.
Water, you know.
Yes, I know.
All right.
So they're great for infusing, you know, flavors into your beer, mead, or cider after fermentation is complete. And there's plenty of things you can use in tinctures, spices, herbs, and even peppers. They're quite potent in them. You know, you can use some 40 proof vodka is often the alcohol of choice. And I would say make yourself a whole pantry of these. Because at any time, you might find yourself in the mood to develop some new flavors in your your homebrew.
Ron, what did I ask you to do before the show started?
Huh? Hey, if you're listening to this podcast, quiet your phone. All right, where was I?
Tinctures.
Yes. Make yourself a whole pantry of these because at any time you may get in the mood to develop some new flavors with some beers you already have on tap or even that you've bottled because it's fun. That's why.
Yeah. And, company may come over. It's the holidays. Break up the tinctures.
it's a great holiday ritual.
It is.
It's fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some examples, coffee, vanilla beans, rosemary, sage, spices like that, chipotles. Or other types of peppers, and if you're using a pepper, you may want to take some of those seeds out, or not. You know, if you want to leave them in, then you might end up with quite the spicy meatball, and so on like that. So I say, go ahead and be mad with your alchemy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that, John, I ask, so what's brewing?
You know, finally, Ron, a little guy here in the state of Florida is taking on the insane growler laws.
Wow.
This is what's brewing.
Tell me.
So, Florida is violating the United States Constitution by arbitrarily banning restaurants, taverns, and breweries from selling the most popular portable jug for craft beers, the half-gallon or 64-ounce growler. You know, we have talked about this before on Homebrew Talk, and you know, this is not a surprise from a state whose, gubernatorial debates get in all in a huff over a portable fan.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, coming from the land of the dangling Chad, you know, we do not allow here in Florida, we do not allow 64-ounce growlers. You can have a 32-ounce growler.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a 128-ounce growler.
That sounds like an awful lot.
That's an awful lot. You know, and if you search the TV20 archives, you might find, indeed, that is an awful lot of beer. You know, 32 ounces too small, 120 ounces too big, 64 just right. At least that's what 47 other states. But yesterday, a civil rights lawsuit was filed in federal court on behalf of the owners of a downtown Stewart craft beer restaurant called The Crafted Keg. And the lawsuit was filed by a national free enterprise legal organization called Pacific Legal Foundation. This case is called Crafted Keg versus Lawson, and that refers to Ken Lawson, who is the Secretary of the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation. So Mark Miller is the managing attorney for PLF's Atlantic Center, and I'm going to read to you his quote because I think it's quite good. He says that Florida imposes a double standard by allowing less popular growlers but banning the one that people prefer. Florida's restrictions stand in stark contrast to 47 other states where half-gallon growlers are perfectly legal and have become the industry standard. There's no defensible reason for Florida to single out the most popular craft brew jug and ban it. You know, really, and I think he's absolutely right, totally crazy. It's been shown that that craft beer brings tourists around, and you know when they come in from 47 other states and maybe bring a growler from their favorite brewery in North Carolina or Colorado or you name it, any place else with sane laws, you know we cannot legally fill those in Florida, which is really just crazy. So Miller goes on to explain. This is why the growler ban cannot be allowed to stand. Protecting a powerful industry's market share is not a legitimate reason for government restrictions or regulations. It doesn't justify limiting the economic liberty of other businesses and consumers under constitutional guarantees of due process and equal rights. Regulations must serve the public interest, not the demands of the well-connected for protectionism.
So you go.
Yeah, man. I am really excited that somebody is bringing a civil case and... I'm sure that this is you know being done as a means of you know changing the law as opposed to seeking any specific damages. Who knows? But you know again, I mean, there really is no rational reason why we allow a gallon growler fill and do not allow a half gallon, which is the industry standard. So my hat is off to. The folks down there in Stuart, and we wish them the best in this lawsuit, and hopefully it will bring around some change.
Oh. Yeah. And as always on Homebrew Talk,
we say support your local breweries and your local craft beer bars. If you are so inclined on the Book of Faces, go and check us out and give us a like.
Boy, I'm sure glad that's over with. Me too! Yeah, but you know... I learned something today.
Yeah, I say, you know, infusing coffee into your beer, it's a great way to step up your homebrew alchemy skills. You know, just be sure you do it the right way and make Mrs. Olson proud.
You know, I could say something really cliche about adding spices to spice up your homebrewing portfolio, but I'm not. I'm going to say Florida growler laws are not only stupid, they're potentially unconstitutional.
Nice. All right, we're done brewing here at Homebrew Talk. We'll be back next month. But if you can't wait, you can always check out our past podcasts at homebrewjockey.com.
Get Folgers, mountain-grown coffee. You'll like the flavor.